Hey guys, this is Naeem, and you've reached the Mosaic Church podcast. So excited that you're part of our listening community, and I'd love for you to be even more connected. So check out our website. There's more content there, and there's more opportunities for you to get connected in our ministries and events as well. Also, love for you to share this content. If this is blessed to you, I know that God wants to use you to bless other people with it. So share this podcast, if you will. Lastly, would you consider supporting this ministry? This is made possible by other people's generosity, and I'd love for you to pay it forward. Join us to reclaim the message and the movement of Jesus together. So would you consider giving to this ministry? I know that God is able to do immeasurably more through us when we come together. Thank you so much. God bless you and enjoy.
We've got to give ourselves to this struggle until the end. Nothing would be more tragic than to stop at this point in Memphis. I want to thank God once more for allowing me to be here with you. I left Atlanta this morning and then I got into Memphis. And some began to say the threats, or talk about the threats that were out. What would happen to me from some of our sick white brothers? Well, I don't know what will happen now. We've got some difficult days ahead. But it really doesn't matter with me now, because I've been to the mountaintop. I don't mind. Like anybody, I would like to live a long life. Longevity has its place. But I'm not concerned about that now. I just want to do God's will. And He's allowed me to go up to the mountain. And I've looked over, and I've seen the promised land. I may not get there with you, but I want you to know tonight that we as a people will get to the promised land. So I'm happy tonight. I'm not worried about anything. I'm not fearing any man. Mine eyes have seen the glory of the coming of the Lord.
Woo! Well, good morning. Wow. This is his last speech, and I'm so grateful for people like him. So grateful for courageous leaders who are not just preachers, but actually pioneers to the future. So grateful that we as a church, I know we've got live stream joining us, and Metro, what's up, in the house as well. And I'm so grateful for us to just stop and acknowledge the fact that there are people who've led the way for us. And I want to also say thank you for being Mosaic Church. I know that people have said this, you might have heard this, it's actually true, that the Sunday morning hour is the most segregated hour of the week. You know, we play together, we work together, but somehow we don't worship together. And it's churches like Mosaic that I'm proud to be a part of and honored that you get help create a Mosaic Church that's a diverse community, that we don't have to look like us, each other, and we don't even believe the same way. Our backgrounds are different. It doesn't matter, but we're here together. And I want to say thank you for being my church, because every given Sunday, I'm definitely the minority. And I'm so glad that you guys have traveled and passed other options and been here. And here's why, because there's so many churches that are doing a great job, but it is hard to have a diverse community. And you guys are courageous enough to not just attend, but I know you guys give, you guys serve, you guys launch another campus. The fact that you guys are about, hey, a mosaic of people. It is a diverse community that lives by faith, is known by love, and that's a voice of hope. And I'm so thankful, again, I got to say this, for you guys pioneering what the future looks like. And I'll tell you what, we're going to leave the church and the movement of Jesus better than we found it. And so I'm so glad that we as a church are here to reclaim the message and the movement of Jesus, fulfill not just Dr. Martin Luther King Jr.'s vision, but also God's vision of one day having an international party, right? I'm believing for like all kinds of food from all kinds of people. You know, like it's going to be great. So, hey, I want to do this. I want to just stop and I want to pray together, a prayer that unifies us and that all of us watching Metro, let's come together and let's stop in this moment and acknowledge how important it is. Let me pray for us. Lord God, we thank you so much for loving us and not allowing us to be ourselves, but yet allowing us to be united with you. God, we are so different from you, but yet you've allowed us to be so close to you. God, thank you for this church. Thank you for these churches that, God, that we are coming together and that proclaiming, God, that this is what the future looks like. The future is a diverse community of faith, a church that is fulfilling the Great Commission, telling the whole world about your purpose. And God, it's the church that you dreamed about. Your prayer was that we would be one. And so, God, that's what we're committed to do. And in this moment, we just thank you for the people who've risked their lives for us, for this nation, for this world, for the church of Jesus, to move us forward from the past and into the future. God, we ask you, would you allow us to be the same? We would pioneer the way of what the church needs to look like in the future. In Jesus' name I pray. Amen. 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 Man, it is good. It is good weekend to be here. I want to shout out to Metro once again. Can we just do that? Because we always want to make some noise for those crazy people over there. You know what? By the way, they have so much fun. I mean, we have fun, but they're crazy. Have you ever visited there? You gotta go. You gotta go in Plaza Midwood. I mean, they're amazing. They're amazing. And literally right now, I know they're screaming. I know they're going crazy right now. But hey, another news, by the way. Another news. It's got a kind of confession time. I got a ticket this past week. I got a speeding ticket, friends. It was 4 points. Yeah. Okay. 4 points. Yeah. I know what you're thinking. How fast were you going? Right? None of your business. Number one. It was for the Lord, obviously. not for the Lord. 20 miles over the speed limit? Yeah, 20 miles. Great guy stopped me. It was at night. He was a good guy. And it was funny about it is that in the whole time we're having this conversation, I was really confused. Here's why. First of all, he took my stuff, went back, didn't come back for like 10, 15 minutes. I was like, what's going on? What's happening? Okay? I was like, kind of getting weird. Like, I'm like, okay, this is not going to go well. Like, how do I do this? Then he comes back, really happy and all that. I think he's smiling. He comes back and he goes, hey, so, you know what's interesting? I was like, oh, no. I was like, he's like, you know, there's a warrant out for an arrest. It's a federal warrant out for arrest with a guy with your name and date of birth. Now, my name is unique, by the way. I don't know if you guys know this. I'm Naeem Fossil. Okay? Starbucks has an issue with that. Like, what? What? What do you say? Neem? Whatever. I'm Beyonce in Starbucks. Anyway, so that's number one, my name. The second is my date of birth. Here's why. You know when I was born? 420. 420. Why am I doing that? I don't know. Don't do drugs. And so I'm like, yeah. And then he said, so are you from California? Now, when people ask me, are you from California, I take that as a compliment. I was like, and usually I'm like, sort of yes, no, not really. But this time I was like, I kind of figured like where he was getting to. And I was like, what is a California? What is a California? What is this thing called? What is this? And he was like, you're not? I was like, no. He said, all right, just wondering. I was like, are you going to arrest, like, are you saying I'm the guy? Or are you not? Like, are we laughing? I don't know. Haha. Am I about to get arrested? Because I'm like, I don't know. You just told me. Anyways, it was so confusing. And he was like, all right, man. Well, I'll see you. I was like, okay. He's like, you know what? If you want to come back, I'll drop the points and I'll help you out. I was like, okay. All right. Because I don't know if he was thinking, come back. You might have some time to think about it. If you want to confess, you are the guy. Like, I don't know. Like, I don't know what it was. But he was so generous, so great about it. But when I left, I was like, the whole time I was like, I don't know. Like, communication was an issue. And I just realized something. Like, it doesn't even matter if it's a stranger or a person you know. Communication is hard, isn't it? When it comes to relationships, it's hard. And this morning, I want to talk about this idea of courageous relationships. We started a series about it. And I think we got to be courageous when it comes to relationships, because relationships are truly unique and complex. I mean, communication is hard in them, trying to figure out like what people are trying to do. And also, I've noticed, like, even if you know this person for a long time, you find yourself going, I don't know if you mean what. Like, have you ever said something to someone very close and you're like, I didn't mean that? Like, you meant not to say it, you thought it. You know what I'm saying? It's like it's just so hard. So I thought, you know what? We need to have a conversation about what does it mean to have like relationships that are actually courageous? Because some of us, it's not just awkward and it's not just communication. It's a lot of things. Some of us are not having conversations that we're supposed to have in the relationships that are really important to us. Others of us, you've kind of like just let go of some issues. You let go and you're thinking, I'll just deal with it. And some of you are thinking, you know what? This is as good as it gets. Well, I'm here to tell you that relationships are supposed to be the most powerful, wonderful, beautiful thing in your life. But it takes very hard work. It takes a serious amount of commitment and serious amount of courage. And so I believe God's calling us, if we're going to have great relationships, that we have to have courageous relationships. We have to move past the hard stuff and actually get into it. So I don't know what relationship you're thinking or what came to mind. So what I want to do is I want to talk about a passage, and this passage is like, it's like, it is the one passage, a lot of people would say, it is the one passage that has brought more people into a relationship with God than any other passage. Now, if you're wondering, you're like, I know, what are you talking about? It is the prodigal son story, okay? The prodigal means, you know, extravagant. It actually should be the extravagant father story, but it's a prodigal son story. Prodigal doesn't mean sinful. It just means extravagant. So here's the story. If you, how many of you have ever heard of it? Amy, you heard of it? Anybody here? Make some noise if you have heard of the prodigal son story. Okay, more this side. What about this side? Have you guys heard of the Bible? Anybody heard of the Bible here? Okay. Just wondering. Metro, I know you guys haven't heard of the Bible. Anyway, so just joking. But and you guys up there too. Hey, what's up? So the story is there's a dad. Now, Jesus tells a story, but he's made it up. It's not a real story, okay? But he tells a story about a dad who had two sons. A younger son takes the inheritance, takes off, spends all the money, comes back broke, busted, and he wants to work for the dad. Dad says, no, you're my son. You once were lost. Now you are found. Okay, that's how it goes. The older son gets mad, ticked off, and is not happy about the whole thing. That's pretty much the story. But I think if we read it, you find how Jesus is such a master. He's communicating not just a story, a funny story or an amusing story. He's talking about the relationship that people, the humanity has with God, and also that how we're supposed to have with each other. It is so much packed into this story. So let's jump in and read it together. And I'll give you four things that I believe are going to be extremely hard for us to do, but they'll lead us into having courageous, fulfilling, satisfying relationships, okay? So I'm going to go into Luke chapter 15, and I'm reading the Passion Translation, so it might be different from the translation you have. If you have an app, you can go to that. We'll put it on the screen for you as well. It starts off, it says, then Jesus said, he's making it up, he says, once there was a father who had two sons. The younger son came to his father and said, Father, don't you think it's time for me to share, to give me the share of your estate that belongs to me? Okay, so then he says, so the father went ahead and distributed among the two sons their inheritance. Shortly afterward, the younger son packed up all his belongings and traveled off to see the what? He went to see the world. He journeyed to far off land where he soon wasted. He was given in a binge of extravagant and what? What? Reckless living. So we know what's going on over here. Now, what you might not understand is the depth of the context here. Number one, he's the younger son. He is not the older son. So the older son is like, it's a big deal. The firstborn is the big deal. Like in your household, maybe the firstborn gets all the whatever, you know? In this culture, it's a big deal. I'm not the firstborn. I was the second son. Okay, my older brother, he was the firstborn. He was like the golden child. You know, he's like, ah, he was born. He also, it was the first child. You know what I'm saying? So if you're like, if you're Pakistani Muslim culture, you have a kid and the first kid is a son, whoa. And it's awesome, you know? And my brother, I can show you pictures, but I burnt them. But he looked angelic. In my culture, if you're born lighter skinned, I mean, if you guys understand that? I don't know if you guys understand. Like brown people, black people understand that, okay? If you're born lighter, it's somehow, yeah, what kind of nonsense is that? Anywho, so he's born like, and it's glowing. There's a dove, whatever. I'm born, again, I'll show you pictures later, but not today. It's okay. I mean, honestly, I'm just telling you right now, I look like, I was a black baby. I mean, I really was. I had the lips. I had the hair. My mom's sister, she came to console my mom. There's a whole story about that. She's like, you know what? You know, you can never. You know, the first time you can't get it all right all the time, and. And then my sister was born again. Again, glowing. I'm like, whatever, man. You know, so I was the second one. Basically, the story is over here: the older son gets everything, the youngest son doesn't get jack. But here, he turns the story. He goes, father says, go ahead. Now, I don't know if he knew of the story implied that the son knew what he was going to be doing. I don't know. But the people are listening to the story. They go ahead. Number one, the dad would not do that. Then the son does what? He doesn't like keep it. He doesn't stay. To make more money, to grow the legacy, what does he do? Deuces, I'm out. And then the father, what? Lets him go. Yeah, let him leave. Which again is like, hey, you're gonna leave? Let's bring that money back. Go back. You know, go out with your bad self. Go do your thing. But you're gonna keep the money, the family money here. No, takes the money, comes. And it's honestly irrational. The story starts off with that. And I think Jesus points to the first major thing, which again requires of us, because I mean, if you're gonna have courageous relationships, it's this thing. It's this irrational level of trust. Every relationship requires an irrational level of trust, especially the ones that are super close. Like, you want to grow in them and you want to get to know them. I mean, like you, if you want intimacy, if you want, like, a serious amount of satisfaction in relationships, it is trust. There's no doubt about it. Because nothing kills a relationship when you don't have trust. Because at some point, trust kind of, like, freezes the relationship. Like, if you don't have trust in someone, it honestly freezes the relationship. You still have that relationship. Like, you still have your brother out there, the sister out there, the friend out there, or the friend close by, or the mom and dad, but you don't trust them, and so what it is you have just frozen that relationship. It's not going anywhere. It's still kind of like, it's just there. It's just there. It's not doing anything. And when you and I practice an irrational level of trust, nothing defrosts a relationship. Like giving someone trust. I trust you. Then think about it this way. It is always irrational. When you require a relationship to always make sense, to the person next to you or with you to always make sense and always do the rational thing, if you're always expecting that, you're not going to have trust. You're not going to have trust. And trust is a big thing. And here, Jesus is telling all of us, hey, God trusts you. See, when you come here and you come to him, and some of you guys have come to him and you have a relationship with him and you're like, okay, I'm good. And then you're like, I got to go somewhere else. I want everything God has and now I'm going to go crazy. And for some of us, that's the story. We go crazy. And we come back, you're like, oh. No, but he still trusts you. You see, he irrationally trusts you. Think about it right now. The only reason your relationship with God works is because he irrationally trusts you. He believes in you more than you ever will believe in him. He trusts that you are not going to be the same person, even though you try hard and hard and you are the same person. He goes, no, this year. No, let's keep on going. Trust. Now let's keep on going with the story. So verse 14, it says, with everything spent and nothing left, he grew hungry, for there was a severe famine in the land. Verse 15, so he begged a farmer in the country to hire him. The farmer hired him and sent him to feed the pigs. Do you see what Jesus is doing here? If you don't, let me just tell you, culturally, he's going to extremes. People are like, oh, pigs. No, because, okay, so in my culture, it was dogs, okay? So I grew up Muslim, but it was Pakistani Muslim. So it was not pigs things. I don't even know there are pigs in Pakistan. But anyways, but it was like a dog. If you call someone a dog, it was the worst thing in the world. It was the worst. So he's taking that, and he's like, it was like pigs. And then he keeps on going. He says, because no one would feed him anything, right? So humiliated, the son finally realized, he realized what? He realized, where am I here? He realized something. Where in the world am I? I had just lost myself. What verse am I in? Oh, yeah, 16. Okay, good. Thank you so much. Thank you. All right. He was famished, and he was willing to even eat the slop given to the pigs because no one would feed him a thing. Humiliated, the son finally realized what he was doing, and he thought, there are many workers at my father's house who have all the food they want with plenty to spare. They lack what? Help me out. They lack what? Nothing. Well, he had all of that, and he left all of that. He lacked nothing, and he left all of that, which again speaks into how unique and complicated relationships are. You can be fully fulfilled in a relationship and still go, I want more. It's the human condition. He's like, okay, so why am I here? He says, why am I here? Dying of hunger, feeding these pigs and eating their slop. And again, this is Jesus telling a story. This person doesn't exist. So they're like, would he do that? I don't know if he would do that. Verse 18, I want to go back to my father's house and ask him and say to him, Father, I was wrong. I have sinned against you. I'll never be worthy to be called your son. Please, Father, just treat me like one of your employees. Now, have you ever had a conflict and then planned out what you were going to say before going to that conversation? Anybody done that? Like you're like have you ever had an action and you're like, it didn't go well, and then this happens to me. It doesn't go well, and this 30 seconds later, I'm like, I should have said that. I should have said that. That would have been amazing. Oh, and I'm like, can you get that back? Now, I've also done this, and you've done it too. Like, you're going to a meeting, you're going somewhere, and in the car, you rehearse it. You rehearse what you're going to say. You rehearse it, you rehearse it, you rehearse it, and you know exactly what's going to happen. Does it ever? It doesn't. It doesn't. The problem is that they say something that you were not ready for. You're like, we're going to talk about this here. And then all of a sudden, like, it's Sunday morning church, and you pull out, you know, like, you go in here, and the person brings it up. And you're like, now? This is not how it's supposed to go down. No. Or you're like cooking and everything's all happy and they just throw something. You're like, we're not going there. This is not happening right now. We're not talking about this. This guy planned out exactly what he was going to say. It does not work out that way, right? But he shows up. What's happening here? What is Jesus saying? Jesus is saying is like there's a point in our lives that when you, if we're the ones who are moving away from another person, if we're the ones, the ones that actually made the mistake, we're the ones, you have to come to a point where you are humbled and humbled enough to go, I'm going to stop and consider what I have done. See, what Jesus is introducing here, I think, is the second big idea, and that is that we have to get to an unashamed stage of vulnerability. An unashamed stage of vulnerability. Not just vulnerability, no. An unashamed. That takes a lot of guts. That's coming and saying, I'm the worst. I've done this. I think this way. It's like I'm stripped of everything. I have no pride left. So Jesus is saying, this is what relationships happen. This is where these needs to happen. At some point, the person needs to go, I'm going to humble myself. Because if you are not vulnerable in a relationship, there is, friends, there is no intimacy. I mean, some people have said, into me, see, which is kind of cheesy, but it kind of makes sense, doesn't it? Intimacy says, I'm going to allow you to look inside of me. And here's the thing. And I'm scared you're not going to like it. And that's when the stage of being unashamed, saying, this is who I am, this is what I think. See, if you're in a relationship, or if you're in relationships with your friends and people we hang out with and all that good stuff, and you still feel all alone sometimes, the problem is that you're not vulnerable, and you're ashamed of the things that you think and you've done, and you're just ashamed, and you're not allowing people in. And sometimes you know this, right? You talk to people sometimes, and you're like, man, this person is keeps everything close to the vest, right? It's like they just don't let people in. The problem is that's what they've done for so long. And see, here's the problem with that. Some of you, it's not the vest that you're holding on. It's a clothing. It's a kind of an image that you was maybe put on you, and you just took it because everybody was cool with it. And you are now older, and you are still pretending to be the person that everybody likes and everybody is cool with. And what happens? You end up realizing at some point, I'm living a lie. I'm not even this person. And that's the worst thing. You don't want that. It's easier to just go, this is who I am, okay? I'm just being vulnerable here. I don't know. This is who I am. It's so much harder, friends, to just stop, and you're like older, and all these people think you're this person, and you're really not. And then it's so hard, and the internal shame that causes you to hurt yourself is just unbearable sometimes. So let's just be courageous. Let's be vulnerable. So he goes back, and he knows exactly what he's going to say. And so now Jesus is going to turn the story. Like, so what's going to happen? What's going to happen, right? Everybody's going, okay, so what happens? What happens? So verse 20, so the son, right? So the son, the young son sets off from home, from a long distance away. His father saw him coming. So he sees the son coming. Now, ironically and conveniently, I have a son. I have a son, Asher. He's here. The prodigal son returns. What? He's here. So what happens, right? He saw him a long distance away, dressed as a beggar. Not really. But hey, I gotta run to you. So, what happens? Dressed, okay, with great compassion swelled up in his heart, for his son, he returning home. So the father raced out to meet him. Yes. It says here he swept him up in his arms and hugged him dearly and kissed him all over. We're doing this. Come on. Come here. Come here. It's natural. It's all good.
Please.
Okay. Fine. Okay, but hold on. What else happens? Then the son said, Father, this was good. Come here. And it says, then the son said, Father, I have...
It was wrong.
That's just stop right there. I forgive you. Okay, I've
sinned against you. I could never deserve to be called your son.
Wow, that's not true.
Just let me be.
And then what happens? The father interrupted him and said, he probably didn't do that. That was weird. He's like, no. He's like, you're home. Turning to his servants, the father said, quick, bring me the best robe, my very own robe, and I will place it on his shoulders. Bring the ring and the seal of sonship, and I will put it on his finger. Bring out the best shoes you can find for my son. So, conveniently as well, I do have this is what sheikhs wear in Kuwait, right? Arabs wear this. This is a robe. It's got gold, like, all over. Look at this. Okay. And then gives him a ring, because the sonship ring. I don't have shoes. We are the same size, but you have shoes on. So he goes, he looks at him, he's celebrating him, right? And then what happens, right? What happens? He goes, okay. And then he says this. He says, let's prepare a great feast and celebrate, for this beloved son of mine was once dead, but now he is alive again. Once he was lost, but now he is what? And everyone celebrated with overflowing joy. Woo! Thanks. Give him a hand. So what happens here? What's the truth here? The truth here is, is that the next, not the next stage, but another hard thing for us to understand is that that courageous relationships require is an uncomfortable point of acceptance. It's getting to a point you're uncomfortable, but it's at a point of acceptance. Notice what he did here. He didn't clean him up. He didn't have a talking to. He just what? He hugged him. He ran towards him, which is ironic in that stage. He ran towards him. I wish I could illustrate this. I wish I could, because like in the Middle Eastern culture, you have to hike up your clothing to actually run. So it was humbling for the father to actually run towards his son. And he runs towards him and he puts on all his stuff. What is God? What is Jesus saying about God? He's saying when you come to him, when you're at you're vulnerable, you've reached that stage, you're open, you're honest, you're humble, he comes to you and you've rehearsed a prayer. I'll never do this again, I'm so sorry. He interrupts you and he says, hey, you're here. You're here. And everybody else is going, no. Let's have a talking to. Do you have any of the money left? You stink. You literally stink. Because again, Jesus wanted to point out pigs and then kissing him. Just understand that in the midst of your sin, in the midst of you feeling disgusted of the kind of person you are, Jesus goes, I just want to kiss you. Because Jesus believes this, and God believes that he can heal us with a hug. And for some of us, we've never allowed God to hug us, because we don't even accept ourselves. And this requires us to reach a point of uncomfortable point of acceptance. And the problem with acceptance, and problem with an uncomfortable point of acceptance, acceptance always looks like approval. It feels like it. You're like, are you going to seriously let him? Are you just going to, oh, so we're okay with this. Have you ever heard that before? Are you okay? It's acceptance, because if you don't accept the person who is standing in front of you, how will you accept the person who they will become? Acceptance is a requirement of a relationship. I just accept you. I don't want to change you. You see, if you enter into a relationship and you're in a relationship and the person is just waiting around for you to get your stuff together, what's going to happen is you're going to get your stuff together and leave. That's the reality of it. Because who wants to be in a relationship that all they see is like, I'm just waiting, one day, you'll get better. Could you imagine if that was the stance of Jesus to us? He has reached the point of being uncomfortable to the point when it comes to acceptance of us. It's not approval. It's just acceptance. It's just acceptance. I accept it. I get it. And it works both ways, friends. Like, we have to come to a point where there's people in our lives and they're in a unique situation. You just have to accept it. That's part of growing up. That's part of having strong, courageous relationships, is accepting people. Now, Ashley, my wife, she put this quote out there, and I think it's pretty profound. It's by Dr. Henry Cloud, and he's a relationship guy, and he writes this. He says, we can't manipulate people into swallowing our boundaries by sugarcoating them. Boundaries are a litmus test for the quality of our relationship. Boundaries are. And then he says, those who can't respect our boundaries are telling us that they don't love our no's. They only love our yeses, our compliance. I only like it when you do what I want. I only like it when you do what I want. I only like it when you act like I want. It's not a relationship by any stretch of the imagination. What does it mean for you and I to live in the relationships we're in with a level of acceptance and say, hey, it's okay. It's okay. It's okay. You see, I have to live my life in such a way where my kids and my friends have room to grow and change, to begin to have new thoughts and new ideas that are contrary to mine. It's okay. It's not the end of the world. It's not the end of the world. I talk to people how like they go, oh, you know, this person I know, and you know, oh my gosh, they've started believing this. Oh my gosh, they're like, you know, and they're so worked up about a person's thoughts and how what they think and believe. And you know, they're so concerned about it. Even parents, like, oh, my son, my daughter's thinking all this. And I've thought, have you ever changed your mind about anything? We all have. Just give them some time. It's okay. It's okay. It's okay. What does that look like for you? Because if it doesn't, if acceptance is not cool with you, then Jesus has something to say. So verse 25, he says, now, the older son, now he's in the story, was out working in the field when his brother returned. I love that. Did you see what he said? Did you see what he did there? Dude, party, pigs. Father kisses him. Son, older son is what? Slaving away. I'm doing this. So he's slaving away. As he approached the house, he heard music and the music of celebration and dancing. So he called over one of his servants and asked, what's going on? The servant replied, it's your younger brother. He's returned home and your father is throwing a party to celebrate his homecoming. Isn't it awesome? And he's like, come again? What? He's back, huh? You know, I told you he'd be back. Did he bring any money? Is he broke? Oh, I knew it. Now, I don't know what this story implies, but the story is, though, that Jesus wants us to sit in the tension of the fact that now the older brother represents a part of us, in all of us, who are not okay sometimes with people and what they've done because you're dwelling on their past, not the possibility of their future. And so here he goes. He comes, and in verse 28, the oldest son became what? Became angry and did what? He what? Help me out. He what? He help me out, all everybody. Refused to go in and celebrate. See, there's people in our lives where we refuse to celebrate. You're like, no, I'm not doing it. I'm not celebrating that nonsense. I'm not celebrating any of that. I'm not. You refuse to go in. And Jesus is talking about how our hearts work like this, that we refuse to celebrate people. We refuse to look at the possibility of their future. We refuse. Why? Because we're looking at their past. We're looking at and we're looking at our present and all the things we've done. So then what happens? The story is so fascinating. So his father does what? He comes out and pleads with him. The father is the guy who's been running around. He's lost a lot of calories. He's like, I'm running to the younger son. I'm running to the older guy. What's going on here? Every time Jesus places God as the one who pursues humanity, which is profound, friends. I mean, talk about a courageous God and courageous relationships. He pursues us. He moves us towards us. He has irrational trust. He allows us to be vulnerable. He comes in human form towards us. And so here, he comes to the guy. To the guy, right? He accepts the son. He comes in and he accepts the older son too. But he comes to him and he goes, hey, come enjoy the feast with us. The son said, Father, listen, how many years have I been working like a slave for you, performing every duty you've asked as a what? Faithful son. And I've never disobeyed you. And you've never thrown a party for me because of my what? Faithfulness. Never once have you even given me a goat so that I could have a feast on and celebrate with my friends like he's doing right now. But look at this what? Help me out. Son of whose? Have you ever, okay, if you've ever been around parents, it's the funniest thing. What? Yes. Yes. Are you going to talk to your daughter? Are you going to talk to your son? He's also yours. No. Right now, he is your son. And it kind of implies that he got it from you. Like, it kind of like a little bit of, a little, right? I'm like, just a little bit of, your son is back. Your son, your sister, your brother. He's so good at this, right? He's like, your son, he's back. And then he comes back after wasting your wealth on prostitutes. Now, there's no proof of that, right? He's not on Instagram following his stories. Look, no, there's none of that going on, right? He just puts that in there. He goes on prostitutes and reckless living. And here you are throwing a great feast to celebrate for him. He's like, you are celebrating his sin. You're celebrating his sin. Like, he's correcting the father. Did you ever want to correct God? Oh, yes. Yes, we would never admit this, but it's so true. We're like, are you kidding me? You're going to bless him like that? You gotta be out of your mind. Someone else needs to advise. Can I help you? Let me just pray what should happen. He's like, what are you doing? What are you doing? And the father said, my son, you're always with me. You're always with me and by my side. Everything I have is yours to enjoy. It's only right, though. It's only right to celebrate like this and be overjoyed because this brother of yours was once dead. He's gone. Do you remember? I don't know about you, but I thought he was over. It was over. I thought he wasn't coming back. I thought that his dream, his ambition would kill him. His addiction would see him to his deathbed. I thought that was going to happen. But now he's alive and back with us. With us, not just me, with us. He was lost, but he is what? He is what? He's found. He's found. What is God saying? God's saying that courageous relationships need an unlimited supply of grace. You have to have an unlimited supply of grace. And if there are people in your life, you're like, I have this much grace left for you. Right? Because we all have people like that. While you're saying that, I just want you to know, God says, well, I've never had that moment with you. Because my grace is unlimited. And I want you to do the same. Because when you stop grace in a relationship, all the love is gone. It's over. I have no grace for you. I have no tolerance for you. Bitterness comes in. It takes over our lives. It starts growing, being super disappointed, being just angry in a relationship. I should have never married you. And now I can't even get a divorce because I am going to look like that guy. And my family is going to be like, I don't want to be the first guy who gets a divorce. But you lied to me. You did, you lose it. Have you done that? Are you there? Hey, I can't believe you would do this. So much anger. See, the problem is grace and anger can't coexist. It's just tough. It's tough. It does cannot live in there. And so God says, I can either be angry at humanity and wipe them all up again and again and again, or I can have what? An unlimited supply of grace, which sounds irrational for sure. Which sounds all kinds of things, but it is what God is calling us to live in. So let me ask you as we end. Courageous relationships. What do you need? How can I help you be courageous and brave in the relationships you're in? How can I put courage into you? Because life has discouraged you, has taken away. And for some of you, life has taken away courage. You're like, I can't do this. I can't have this conversation. I can't have this moan with this person. I'm telling you, you can do it. Be kind, be generous, trust, be vulnerable, accept. It's okay. We're all in a journey. Have boundaries, get help, have other people to help you, but let's be brave in relationships. Friends, it's all we have. It's all we have. Like, I'll tell you this, I look at my kids and I go, I say this every time I interact with them, okay? I go, I'm going to know them more as adults than kids. Just think about that. I'm going to know them more as adults and kids. And so that changes my viewpoint of the kind of person I need to be. Because so many of us, we just want our friends and our parents or our loved ones to be a certain kind of person. I think God's saying, why don't you become that? Like, why don't you lead the way of what it means to be courageous? So let me pray for us. Let me pray for our relationships right now. Let's close our eyes for a second and just kind of go with God with this. God, we thank you so much for this story. Jesus, I'm so grateful for the story like this because it invites us all. It starts us off with a journey towards you. It says, God, that regardless of who we are, God, you look at our future. You look at everything that you put inside of us. And what is profound to me is that it's not about what we've done or who we are. It's about whose we are. It's this identity that is the true identity. It's not the false identity or the stuff that we collect or make up or pretend to do or get to do or talented in and that makes up our identity. No, our identity rests in you. We are loved and accepted by you. We have been given grace, so much grace. We've been given so much acceptance. And God, you've humbled yourself. You've made yourself vulnerable that we could actually reject you because you are the first one to say, I love you. So, Father, I pray that for some of us, we would say, I love you back. This morning would be the day that says, Jesus, I give you my life. I give you my heart. I give you my heart. I don't know about all this other stuff. I just give you my heart. I just give you myself. I am back. And I give you my life. I don't deserve. I want to come home. I want to come home. God, I thank you that we can all come home. We can always come home. Always come home. And I thank you for people who've come home in this moment. I thank you for that. And God, for all of us who need courage in our relationships, I pray you infuse in us to be strong and courageous. That you would guide our words, our hearts, our minds, that we would do the one thing that the enemy does not want. The enemy, the word devil, actually means to divide. He wants us all divided. He doesn't want us in close relationships. God, I know that you want to make us one. So God, I pray to that end in Jesus' name. Amen.
Thanks for listening to this message from Mosaic Church in Charlotte, North Carolina. For more audio and video content, visit us at mosaicchurch.tv.